All right, it's 1 minute after nine. Let's get started, okay? We are in the midst of a study, and it's an impossible study to cover in the eight or nine classes we've had together, but thank you so much for being tolerant. I think we've done a reasonable job in discussing it, and the first six slides you've seen, you need to understand that you cannot understand American history if you don't know Bible, if you don't know the geography of America. And so the thing we've got on there is says imagine teaching about Jamestown or Plymouth Rock or the Great Lakes or the Mississippi River if you didn't have maps. They're just names. They're just words. When it comes to the Bible, that's what it is. Nineveh? Where's Nineveh? I don't know. What place does it play? Well, I think, Jonah went there and preached. No, it's about that format. Nineveh's a location. It's a city. It's the capital of a nation. And until you get Bible maps inside your head, you will really, really struggle. And so we look at the Bible, and there's an Old Testament view of the Bible. And, there's a little red arrow that's there, and I put that there as a marker because that part of looking at all of those confusing maps you've got in the back of your Bible, that's a marker for me. I look for that little corner of the Mediterranean Sea. And then in addition to that, we'll show this in a minute, I look for the Jordan River because that's sort of the central thing. I mean, you try to get you a vantage point. You know where your home is. You know what's north of you and south of you and what's out west from where you live and everything. That's the way we think. And so in when it comes to Bible maps, maybe a third of the world, at least, looking at a globe or something like that. And so that's the Old Testament view. You look at it, you see the red arrow that's there. All of the stuff that is in that red arrow that is over here on the other side, to the right of that red arrow, is Paul's missionary journeys. That's the New Testament world. But the Old Testament world deals with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so you've got the promised land. And so you've got the boundaries of the promised land. But where is that? Well, Abraham came from Ur. We talked about where Ur is. I hope you've got enough remembrance of where he went. I hope you've got in your mind a map of Abraham's journey. It'll just help you to know that somewhere down there near wherever the Garden of Eden was, and we have no idea exactly where it was, we know what rivers are associated with it, there's Ur. So Abraham leaves this area, comes up here, and then he comes down into that promised land. Three promises to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, and you've got to get this. You will never understand the Bible until you read Genesis 12. I'll make of you a great nation. Put you in a great land, and that highlighted part on the map is the boundaries of that great land, and I'm going to send a great Savior. That's the story of the Old Testament in three sentences. It's God's dealing with that great nation. Where's it come from? Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And, of course, Jacob gets you down here into the land of Egypt. They come to Mount Sinai, and we've only got a couple of maps that might look at that. And then Moses gets us down to Mount Sinai, and then we get back up. Then we get back up into the promised land. Look at that next slide, and you'll see what we're talking about. There's the New Testament view. Now, I didn't put my red arrow here. I should have, but I guarantee you, I saw it in my mind when that's up there. So now then, here's the Old Testament world, all of this land way over here off the map. Here is the New Testament world because it's about the spread of the church. And so it doesn't mean that the New Testament world's not mentioned in the Old Testament. Parts of it are, but you come to this area. And thank you, Buzz, for really helping me go through these slides. I told Buzz we're going to go through them in a hurry, and I am really, really glad. Now then, look at the New Testament view, and there you've got the arrow. There you've got the arrow, and there's my other marker, and that is the Dead Sea. It's a big enough sea so you can see the Dead Sea, but what flows into the Dead Sea is the Jordan River. Think of how often in the life of Jesus the Jordan River is mentioned. It's mentioned in the Old Testament. It's a big part of the life of Moses and the Jews coming into the Promised Land. But that's what you've got. If you look at a map, what am I looking at? When you look at those maps in the back of your Bible, what am I looking at? So sometimes the Bible zooms in, and it allows you to look at particular parts of it. For example, here is the New Testament world right here. See this zoom right here? We'll talk about this in almost all of this lesson today. And Buzz, I'm not sure I left the next slide that has Mount Sinai in it in Egypt. I don't think I did. I probably took it out. Okay, let's look at that part that we're zoomed in on. And these are some slides that we looked at last week, but I'm going to slow down a little bit right now. I want you to look. Go ahead and look at the next slide, Buzz. And when you look at that next slide, here's that zoomed area. Now then, you see the Dead Sea? Well, where is that other marker? Well, it's not even here. That other marker is way, way up here where the Great Sea, the Mediterranean Sea, that's here. That's the New Testament world all the way over there. Here's the Old Testament world. But when you first get introduced, there are these Canaanite nations. They're almost tribal. If you can think about American history of a Cherokee nation, that's what they had. And they fluctuated which ones were important, which ones were powerful. One of the more powerful one was the Hittite nation. Archaeologically, we found a lot about the Hittite nation. And it's really interesting. At one time, people didn't want to believe the Bible, and they said, well, the Hittite nation does not even exist. We cannot find, there's just no evidence there ever was a Hittite nation. But as they kept digging and looking and everything, we're off topic. We're over talking about archaeology. There is a world of information about this great Hittite nation. So whenever the Jews are down in the land of Egypt, the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, through Joseph, they're down in the land of Egypt. Moses comes along, and Moses says and mentions many of these tribes by name. There's the Girgashites, there's the Hittites, the Canaanites, the Amorites, the Zebulites, there's the Perizzites, and there's another location of the Hittites. And I know I've said this before, but Brother Keeble is one of my favorite preachers. He'd quote this verse, and he said, and probably all those other ites. You know, every one of them ends in ite, so that's what you're talking about. Now then, they're there during the time of Abraham, or at least some of them even begin during the time of Abraham. But whenever Joshua comes in and conquers that land, we've got a totally different map. The exact same land, but a different map. And so if you're looking at maps in the back of your Bible, all of a sudden, what am I looking at? I thought this is where the Canaanite nations were. It's like where their Cherokee Indians are. I mean, they've got a place in our history, but that's past history. And so when you get to the Promised Land, what does Joshua do? He comes in and takes the Promised Land. And he takes all of that land, and the land is divided among the 12 tribes, 12 tribes of Israel. Here's you a thing that'll help you understand the Bible. Israel is a man's name. I thought Children of Israel for the longest time was the name of a nation. Well, it is. It's a description of a nation. But I never knew, I'm not going to tell you how old I was before it finally dawned on me what I was saying. I wish somebody when I was in the, seventh or eighth grade had taught me that Israel is somebody's name. God changed Abram's name to Abraham. Sarai to Sarah. Bible names have real significance. And so if we're talking about the children of Israel, who's Israel? I know it's the name of a nation. Yeah, where'd that name come from? Because God changed Jacob's name to Israel. And so when I'm talking about the children of Israel, who am I talking about? talking about the children of Jacob, the children of Israel down in Egypt. How'd they get there? Joshua carried them down there during his day. Not Joshua, Joseph carried them down there during his day. Who's that that goes down from the promised land? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Oh, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel. It's Israel's sons. It's the children of Israel that go down to the land of Egypt. Who comes out of the land of Egypt? 430 years after Jacob gets down into that land, the children of Israel come out. Who's that? That's the children of Jacob. You know, if you can think, and this is not a word is that I know of, but it's a good word that I use in my mind to sort of remember it. They're not the Israelites. They're the Jacobites and all those otherites. You understand? So when I talk about the Israelites, I don't even think of Jacob. I should. You know, that's the Jacobites. And then there's a nation that is over there in that name, in that land right now, called the Israelis. Oh, you say, you hear the word Israel in Israeli? Yeah, Israel-E, Israelis. So it's all over the news right now, the Israelites. And so you've got, who's that? Well, that's the Jacobites. That is to the Jacobies. In my mind, when I hear Israelis, who is that? That's the Jacobites. They're the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's who that is. Now then, David, Moses dies, or pardon me, they take the land, Joshua dies, they're ruled first by judges. And so we don't have a map showing the judges. We had that up there last week in our study showing where the judges were for 400 years. It's still that land that you've got back over there whenever Joshua divided the land among them. But now there's a book named Judges in the Bible. They get in that land, they got to have a government. What kind of government do they have? They have judges. And so the Lord raises up judges as judges and also as leaders of Israel. And so you talk about Samson. You talk about Jephthah. Here's one you'll recognize, Gideon. Who's he? He's one of those judges. And so during the time of Gideon is the one. Now then, when you get beyond the judges, what happens after judges? Well, 1 and 2 Kings. That's what happens after judges. They change the nature of government. And you look at American history, we had the Continental Congress. Is that what I'm talking? Is that the word I want to describe it during the time that we were breaking away from England? We were not the United States of America until we get a constitution. But there was a Continental Congress that met. And so you first got judges and then you got kingdom. And so now you've got judges, and now they said, let's put a king over us. Violated God's will, did not want that to happen. He said, once you get a king over you, he'll do everything he can to destroy you. We've got a question back here.
A judge is a judge.
You know, and they had the law there in that land, and so they were judges. And if you want to understand sort of where they were in American history, they're the Supreme Court. They were the Supreme Court. There were matters that you got the law there. How do you interpret the law? You know, and so you've got judges. And what do? Well, whenever there was matters they could not settle, whenever Moses was there, whenever Joshua was there, in fact, was it not Jethro that told Moses, you are too busy. You've got to get a whole lot better organized. And so he divided up into thousands and hundreds and smaller groups. And so it's sort of like our judicial system, that kind of thing, like a military arrangement. You start here and you keep going up. But the ultimate one was the judges. But the judges were also the deliverers. because these nations were coming in and oppressing them. And so you've got all of these nations. And so you get to the time of David, first King Saul, and then King David. I suspect that map, yes, this just shows the size of David's kingdom. And it goes all the way down. Here's an interesting little river down here, the River of Egypt. That was the southern boundaries. When God said, I'll give you from the River of Egypt all the way up to the Euphrates River. I know you can't read it. It's off the map up there. That says Euphrates River. God did what he was going to do. Here's an important verse. Look at Joshua 23:45. Look in there. Is it Joshua 21:45 or Joshua 23:45? It says, the Lord God gave unto the Jews all of the land. Starts in verse 43. Must be chapter 21. Yeah. I think it's Joshua 21 starts in verse 43. The Lord gave them all the land he promised to give to them. And so what did he promise? He's from the River of Egypt all the way up. And they possessed it. And they did more than possess it during the time of Solomon. But have you found that verse? Is it 21? Is it 21:43? The Lord gave unto them all the land that he had promised to give unto, and I'm paraphrasing, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And they dwelt in it. They possessed it. And there, verse 45 is interesting. There fell not one of the promises. Guys, that's an important thing. You know what denominationalism talks about? The Jews are going to go back to the promised land. How many times have you heard that as you looked at televangelists? Well, why is it? Because they never had that land. I'm sorry. The Bible says he fulfilled that promise. He fulfilled every one of those promises. And so this idea that someday the Jews are all going to be converted and everything, and there's going to be a great, great time whenever the Jews go back over to the promised land, all they've done is taken Old Testament prophecies, taken it out of the Old Testament, and tried to make it apply to the 21st century. They really started applying it, and I'm off topic, in 1948. That's when the nation of the Israelis, when the nation of Israel was reestablished. 1948. And you're talking about radio evangelists. There were very few televangelists back in 1948. They went ballistic. It's happening. The Lord's ready to come back, because right before he's coming back, all the Jews are going to be converted. And they misunderstand that. Well, if all of the Jews are going to be converted right before Jesus comes back, then every generation from the first century all the way up until 1948, there was no way the Lord could come back. If that's true, he never gave them the land. That's why Joshua 21:45 is, he made those promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and they dwelt in it and they possessed it. It was theirs. And so now then, you've got David. Look at Solomon's kingdom, and Solomon's kingdom is the next slide. It shows the boundaries of Solomon's kingdom, and it goes far, far beyond this. I mentioned this last week, I think. You go, here's the Dead Sea. Keep going down here. Here is the other arm of the Red Sea. We think of the arm of that Red Sea that comes over here, and the Jews came out of Egypt and crossed the Red Sea. Right down here, there's another leg of that Red Sea that runs up there. And there's the Gulf of Aqaba that's on some Bible maps. And Solomon's navy, I want you to hear this, was so massive that he built a fleet of ships. Solomon had money running. Solomon had more money than he ever knew what to do with. And he built a fleet of ships. I guess you could put sheep on the ships anyway, but he built a fleet of ships, and they went, and it was a three-year journey to go over there and come back. And every third year, they brought treasures from India back to Solomon. And so you read about Solomon and all of these animals that Solomon's zoo had. You think about the San Diego Zoo. Wonder what Solomon's Zoo looked like, especially to the world in his day and everything. And so it was really, really the great kingdom. Now that we're jumping in history, because when Solomon dies, that powerful nation is split into two nations. And 85% of the Jews left Solomon's family. This is something, I don't believe I can overemphasize this. Think about the American Civil War. We know what it's like when there's civil war. And so when Solomon dies, this great kingdom, I think the next slide shows that, the kingdom is divided. There's Jerusalem. There's that southern kingdom, and they sort of possess this down here, but really these Philistine nations and other nations really came in. You've got this small part, and then you've got the northern kingdom, and that's 85% of the Jews leave David's family as kings. And this is where Bible history gets real foggy when we're trying to read it. The key thing to remember is the names of these two kingdoms. The northern kingdom starts with an I, and that's Israel. And the southern kingdom starts with a J, and that's Judah. And so here's a little tiny Judah. It looks much bigger here than in reality it was. And then here's Solomon's kingdom. It went all the way up to the river Euphrates. Doesn't take them long until they lose control of that northern part of the land. I know you think I'm weird, but I could not remember which was north and which was south. And that's why I said the northern kingdom starts with an I, and the southern kingdom starts with a J. When I think of I, this is what I think of. When I think of this thing right here, what do you call that? It starts with a J. And so I finally got the I's and the J. The I is Israel. The jaw is Judah. And I'd get over in 1 Kings. When you read 1 and 2 Kings, it's flipping, flopping back and forth from one nation to another and this kingdom and that kingdom and everything. And it's hard to read 1 Kings. Because it's the story of both of those kingdoms. And 1 and 2 Kings is the story of both of those kingdoms. And the way I finally learned to do it, I just took a sheet of paper and drew a legal paper, I think it was, one of these legal pads, Tim, that I know you've used a ton of them, those orange tablets. And I just drew a line down the middle, and I put Judah on the left side and Israel on the right side. And then I wrote who was king and what happened during his kingdom. Get it over there. This is where King Ahab is. This is where this one is. And then this is the southern kingdom. Now then, what happens is they go into captivity. I don't believe we have maps showing this because this is a part of the Old Testament world. But in 722, this kingdom ceases to exist. It does not exist anymore because Nineveh city, Assyria nation. Nineveh and Assyria come down and capture the northern kingdom. And the way they destroyed that kingdom, any kingdom they conquered, to keep its heritage from being there, they moved people out. Leaders oftentimes moved them out to outlying lands and countries and they brought people from outlying countries into that northern kingdom. And so it doesn't exist. You know, it's like the Confederacy. Where does it exist? Only in somebody's imagination. Does that make sense? Why? That's a thing of past history. And so now you've got people up in this area, but who are they? Well, I can give you New Testament words to describe them. Samaritans. When you get the New Testament and you start reading about Samaria, where'd they come from? They came from right here. But this southern kingdom lasts a little bit longer. It's not destroyed by Nineveh, Assyria. It lasts another 100 years, and then it goes into Babylon. And so the southern kingdom goes to Babylon. That's Old Testament world. We pointed that out whenever we were studying the Old Testament world. goes into Babylon. And it goes into Babylon. 70 years later, they come back, and Jews from the northern kingdom and southern kingdom, because the decree went out worldwide, and from all 12 tribes, everybody that wanted to came back. Only, the Bible word, only a remnant came back. 70 years. People in Miami, Cubans, how many of them would dare go back to Havana? They're not Cubans anymore. How long did the Cubans come here? You know, how long? Was that about 50 years, 60 years ago? What year was that? I cannot remember, you know. They don't want to go back. Jews didn't want to go back. They've got their livelihood. They've lived over there. They're in a third generation if you look at 70 years. And they are in a third generation over there. They don't want to come back. And so only a small number come back. And they come back to Jerusalem. And there are three names: Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther. When they come back from captivity, those are three books of the Bible. And when you get to Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, that's the end, historically, of the Old Testament. I mean, I know you've only got, somebody had 5 plus 12 plus, that's it, isn't it? Well, plus, no, 5 plus 12, that's the first 17 books of the Bible. And when you get to the 17th book, that's it. What's the rest of the book about? Psalms, Proverbs, poems, songs, like Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Who wrote Song of Solomon? Oh, Solomon wrote it. He goes way, way back over here. It goes back over before Nineveh and Assyria and before Babylon, and goes back over before the divided kingdom, goes all the way back over. Who wrote Psalms? David. Where's David go? He's before Solomon. And so that's the end of the Old Testament. You've got poetical books, and then you've got 17 books of prophets who lived primarily during the time of the divided kingdom, the captivity, and the restoration. Now, that's the end of the Old Testament. And we've spent too much time looking at this. Let's go to the New Testament. Look at that next slide. Now, here's a New Testament map. Totally, totally different world. We're looking at what we were just looking back before when we had Israel there and had Judah there. We're looking at much of the same land whenever we talked about the kingdom of David, the king of Solomon, the period of the judges, but the geography has changed. And so when you get to the Old Testament, to Malachi, one of the last prophet, there are over 400 years in which there are no prophets. The last thing God said in the Old Testament is, I'm going to send John the Baptist. He didn't call him John the Baptist, but the closing verses of Malachi says someday there's going to be a messenger who's going to come, and that'll be John the Baptist, the forerunner of Jesus. For 400 years, God did not say anything. Nearly 500 years, God did not say anything. And guess what? You open up the New Testament. In those days came John the Baptist preaching down here in the wilderness of Judea. Hello? Where's that? I got this map in the back of my Bible, and here's John the Baptist, and he comes preaching in the wilderness of Judea. Where was Jesus born? Well, Jesus was born down here in Jerusalem. Where were his parents from? All the way up here at Nazareth. That's the extent of it. That's about 200 miles. I mean, we're talking about from You know, it's a narrow country because they really only possess in much of the time from the Jordan River over to the Mediterranean. You hear this thing, from the river to the sea. You know, we want the land from the river to the sea. That's what they're talking about, from this river, from Jordan River back over there. That ought to be Arab land. That's when you'd be on the news, you keep hearing from the river to the sea, from the river to the seas. And these Jews have come in and taken this land from us. And so that's world history, and that's not what we're trying to look at. But it will explain something that's a part of the news. Now then, what does it look like? Well, you remember we mentioned the Samaritans? Here they are. From the close of the Old Testament to the beginning of the New Testament, there's an area here where these tribes, descendants of these tribes, who were intermarried with Gentiles. You've talked about Nineveh and Assyria brought in people from other countries. And so what you have is a mixed race. And when you've got a mixed race, you understand what I'm talking about. What I'm about to say is not racial. But you remember the problem there was between whites and blacks marrying each other? You would go back and probably in your lifetime, if you've got a few years on, you can remember that. No white man would ever marry a black woman. No black woman would ever marry a white man and that type of thing. And any time it happened, they're treated like Samaritans. Does that make sense? They're not, something's wrong with them. And so whenever you say the Jews have no use of the Samaritans, they have no associations with the Samaritans, that's exactly what you've had. Now you've got 500 years of it. You've got all those people coming back during the time of the return from Babylonian captivity, and they'll go 500 years, and you've got a very distinct part of that. Now, geographically, the Jews were down in this southern part, but they were also up in this part, because that was a part of the land that they had had during the time of when the land was divided. And so you got Jews in the, not the northern kingdom, not a kingdom at all. It's three, I like to think of it almost as three counties. We've got Dade County. We've got, is it Lauderdale County? And then we got Palm Beach County, okay? Can you get that? That's what you got. We got to start down here. Here's one, two, and three. We've got Miami, we've got Fort Lauderdale, and we got West Palm Beach. You understand what I'm talking about? Those boundaries were not hard and set sometimes. You don't have state lines. We are so used to having state lines. You would never know when you went from Virginia into West Virginia if the signs were not there. It's the exact same topography and everything. It's just sign on the road. Whenever you get out of Florida, welcome to Georgia. You mean I'm not in Florida anymore? You'd never know if that sign were not there. You're just driving up there and it all looks the same. And that's the way it was. They were not hard and fast boundaries. Now then, you come to this, and I want you to look at this. I want you to remember this. This is the important part. Galilee, Samaria, and Judea. Well, what was this other land? Decapolis. Deca, what does Deca mean? It means 10. What does polis mean? City. Metropolis. Large cities, I guess that's what metro means. I don't know what metro means anyway. And apolis, Annapolis, okay, what does that mean? That's a polis, it's a city. And so you've got Decapolis. The Romans came in and made this area and gave it to some of their rulers, and there were 10 cities over there. And that's not a Bible word, but geographically, when Jesus lived, that was Decapolis. What's over there? That's Decapolis. And then you've got what is on the east side, the east bank, And this was called Perea. It was a part of the life of Jesus. And it was a part of it because the Jews, whenever they were going this way, never went this way. How do you get from Galilee through Samaria? A Jew never went from Galilee. He came down this way. He crossed over because he didn't want to have any association. That is not what Jesus did. Now, on one of these maps, there are some journeys that he made, and that's a man-made map. I want you to know we don't have the actual roadmap Jesus followed, but I know what he did the time that when he met the Samaritan woman. We'll talk about that. Let's look at the life of Jesus. I want to introduce to you something that has been a tremendous treasure in my life. I'm running out of time, I'll bet you. I bet it's later than I thought it was. Oh, I've got 8 minutes. It's been my life right there. I'm in the sixth grade. And my mom and dad buy this very Bible for me. Bound in leather. There is no telling what they bought me, the very best there was. And here's Dan, and he does all of this, and in the back of this, there are 200 pages of Bible helps. And what I want you to think about young Dan, because I've got a map that shows the journeys of Paul. You know, that's another study. David's going to be teaching sometime here in the auditorium, the journeys of Paul. I knew where that was. I went to Freed Hardeman, you know, and I already knew Paul's first missionary journey. They thought I was a biblical genius, that I even knew where these cities were and everything. I started learning that when I was 12. And I've told you, when I was not bad and losing my temper, I spent hours and hours studying that. I even found a mistake in my Thompson. They've corrected in later editions saying that Eve ate the apple. And I remember circling that. That's wrong, you know. I'm 12 years of age, and take a marker and circle. We don't know what she ate. And so, but this became my livelihood. And so what I want you to do is to understand, I'm going to show you the maps that really opened up the New Testament, and we've got 6 minutes to do it with. Let's look at the life of Christ. Here's the life of Jesus. Look at that next slide. Here's his childhood. His mom and dad come from Nazareth down here, and they come down here, and there's a little picture here that shows what's happening here, and there is the biblical verses and everything that explains all of that. And so you just look at the map, you get over here and you read it, and you can read this in the Bible, you can get over here, and they flee down into the land of Egypt. Where's Egypt? I got a Bible map, I know where it is. And then when they come back, instead of coming back over here, when they find that Herod the Great son is reigning, they come back all the way up here to Nazareth. When he's 12 years of age, what does he do? He comes down to Jerusalem when he's 12 years of age. That's the Jesus and Bible geography. That's what he knew. That's the world in which he lived. And then Jesus begins his work. I want you to look at the first year of his life. Well, this is whenever it's called the Thompson calls it his inauguration. It's when he's first become being known as a king. Where is he? Well, he's all over the map, but he's way up here so much of the time. And there he is. There's when he right. We know for sure he walked right through Samaria, because the Jews had no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus did, and he taught the Samaritan woman. Remember the Great Commission? You'll be witness of me in Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria. In the book of Acts, they went to Samaria before they went to any other place outside of Judea. Why? Because that's what Jesus told them to do. There's some good, godly people up there, and so Jesus is there. Here's another map, and it will help you focus and see. Look at the second year. The second year, he's all around this area up here. Look how much is in Galilee. Look at all of the time. That second year of his life, and he's focused right up here in this area. He walks on the water up here. That's the Sea of Galilee. There's your Jordan River. Dead Sea would be down in this area. That is his second year. And there are numbers on that map and everything. And the numbers on this map here, if there are numbers here, correspond to the things that are over here. Look at the third year. That's when opposition arises. And this was two maps, and I had to photograph it and try to make it, cut and paste because it wouldn't lay level on the, I couldn't get a good photograph, but you cannot see how bad that is and how much cutting and pasting I did to get all this to come together. But this is his third year, and this is where the opposition arises. Look at the life's months he had. Look at the next slide, shows the life's months that he had. He's down here in this area, the last months. Look at the last, wait, somebody's photographing it. Wait just a minute, okay? You got it? Okay. Now then, look at the last days of his life. Here's the upper room. This is the city of Jerusalem. It may be a mile and a half across here and maybe 2 miles this way. What's a mile and a half? What is a mile and a half north of us? If you want to think from here south, if you live south, you know what's a mile and a half. I mean, you're not anywhere near Jupiter a mile and a half. I mean, you're way up. You may be up to PGA. You may be up to, you'd be up to PGA. But Indian Town, that might be the boundary, a mile and a half. That's the width of it. And 2 miles might get you all the way up. Wouldn't even get you halfway to Hope Sound. Isn't that amazing? And so here's the end of his life. From the upper room, he goes, and that's numbered there. And I said, it has numbers. He goes to the upper room. He goes to Gethsemane. And here's the journey of his trial before Annas and Caiaphas and Pilate and Herod and back to Pilate. And finally, he's taken out. Show you the last slide that we're going to look at today, and we'll sort of start here. I love this one. The 6 hours he's on the cross. What does he say in those 6 hours? If you want to get a good Bible study book, I'm very partial to the Thompson Chain reference. It's got 4,500 topics, and it's got 100 pages. It's got 50 pages of the best maps you ever would see, and there's so many other helps and everything. But you can get a Thompson, get a hardback. Don't get a leather one. Now, if you want a leather one that will last you from the sixth grade all the way to, way, way beyond the life expectancy on this earth, that's a treasure to me. And we give it to all of every one of our kids that come to Bible classes. They have a Thompson. I look around here. You've got a Thompson, right? And I don't know how much you use it. And others of you have a Thompson. I look at them. I don't know. We were giving out Thompsons whenever you were here. You didn't get one. Well, if you'll go back and enroll in the ninth grade, we'll probably get you one, okay, if you want to do that. But, I mean, it's just the greatest study help there is. That's it for today. Thank you very much. We got one more week.